Good evening. Welcome to Abayagiri Fearless Mountain Monastery. And tonight, very happy to be able to share a few reflections for the people here and for the others listening. And all of us come to the teachings of the Buddha basically for the same reason, and that's that we're searching for something, and it's the same thing that everyone in the world is searching for. Of course, it's happiness, and searching for a way to go beyond our suffering and our problems, and searching for a way to be at ease with life. So the Buddha famously said that I teach only one thing, suffering and the ending of suffering, or we can say happiness and the arising of happiness. So all of the many teachings of the Buddha, they're all concerning happiness and suffering. So we could say that this is the highest path. It's the most relevant practice for people in the world, because we're all searching for happiness, and this teaching is a teaching which is all about happiness and nothing else. So one of my favorite suttas, the Buddha begins by asking the question, why is it that since pretty much everyone in the world desires happiness, why is it that as they live their lives, almost everyone experiences more and more suffering and less happiness? And then the Buddha answers his question by saying it's because they don't understand these four things. And the four things that people don't understand is that some things which are pleasant now, they ripen in the future as pain. And some things which are painful now ripen in the future as pain. And some things which are painful now ripen in the future as pleasure. And some things which are pleasant now ripen in the future as pleasure. And then the Buddha goes through these four categories and describes them. So the first category, that which is pleasant now but ripens in the future as pain, is sensuality, sensual pleasure, anything that people find fun, exciting, interesting, enjoyable in the world. This is what people in the world consider to be happiness. And of course, the Buddha points out the truth that most all of us have probably seen to some extent, at least if we have come to the teachings of the Buddha. And the truth is that although sensual pleasure does offer some kind of happiness, that happiness is very fleeting and short-lived, and the happiness that it gives us is only a very small part of the suffering that arises over time. So this sensuality, finding happiness through the senses, is something that the Buddha says, although it leads to pleasure here and now, over time and in the future, the result is more and more suffering. And of course, the negative result of delighting in the world is longing, desire or craving, longing for the world, so that as soon as we don't have the things that we've enjoyed, then we must be unhappy. So that's the karmic result of sensuality, of delighting in things in the world, is suffering. And for this category, the Buddha gives the simile of, suppose that there was a man who liked pleasure and not pain, who wanted to live and not to die. And then they were to give him a drink, and it would be a drink that was very delicious. And they would say, "Here, good man, is a delicious drink for you to enjoy if you'd like. It will bring you great pleasure, but we have to warn you that it has poison in it. And if you drink it, then at a later time you'll experience death or death-like suffering." And then the man would not reflect on what he had been told, and he would just drink the drink, and he would enjoy the drink as he drank it. And then a short time later, he would be attacked by the poison, and the poison would create extreme pain and suffering for him, and perhaps he would die. So this is maybe one of my favorite similes that the Buddha uses for sensuality, because it shows us the main truth of sensuality, or one of the main truths that the Buddha is pointing out, is that when we compare the amount of pleasure that it brings us to the amount of pain, there's really no comparison. In the simile of the drink, the amount of pleasure that the person experiences is something that lasts for just a number of seconds, or maybe a number of minutes, but the pain which would arise would last for possibly hours and maybe days, and it would probably kill him. So in this way, we see that ultimately, you know, if we can really see the results of our delighting in the world, if we could actually see it clearly, then we wouldn't actually we wouldn't want to walk the worldly path anymore. We would want to find a different kind of happiness, a kind of happiness that was actually real and lasting, and that didn't actually bring suffering, or at least brought more happiness than suffering. And, you know, we can also see if we think of just one, you know, just experiencing one moment of incredible pleasure, and if it only lasted for one moment and then it passed away, then immediately we would feel longing for it. And although the pleasure has only lasted for one moment, the longing would last for many moments, and it might last for minutes and maybe even hours. And then when it finally did pass away, maybe tomorrow we would have the same longing for it, and maybe even in the future we would long for it. So in this way we can see that, you know, even a single moment of delighting in something has very far-reaching negative karmic results. And one other simile that I quite like that the Buddha gave for sensuality is like someone who's in debt, or someone who takes out a loan. So it's very much like, you know, supposing that somebody didn't really have any money, they didn't have any money to enjoy themselves with, so they would go and take out a loan from a bank or from some person, and maybe they didn't understand, and they thought that the person was just giving the money to them. So they were to receive this large sum of money, and thinking that it was just a gift, they would go and delight in that money and spend it. And of course, the person who's loaned it to them expects to have the money back, but not just the same amount that was borrowed, but they will want more. You know, this how kind of loans work, you know, charge interest so that the person who is giving the loan, then they will make money doing it, so that they will receive more than they actually loaned. So it's as if the person who now has a debt and didn't realize that they would have to pay back the money when that debt is due, then it's as if they were to go somewhere else and borrow more money in order to pay off the first debt. And doing that would, in the short term, it would seem to solve their problems, but of course their problems would just grow, because then they would owe even more money to the next person. And it's as if they just continued to do this, borrowing from another person to pay off the previous one, until it got to the point where they couldn't actually borrow that much money anymore from anybody. Nobody would lend them that much money to pay off all their debts, and then they would be crushed by their debts. And this is exactly how we all live our lives, basically. You know, this is the way of sensuality, delighting in the things of the world, and then when the debt is due, that is when we have to experience longing for it, when we have to experience unhappiness, then we run away from the longing, you know, we run away from the unhappiness. We use sensuality as a way of trying to escape from our problems. And this is how everyone basically in the world lives. And running away like this, using sensuality to cover over our problems, is just like taking out a new loan. And we, for a short time, we feel better and we feel like everything is fine. But of course, in the future, then we will have more longing and more craving. And this is something that I think, you know, most all of us have seen to some extent. I think the, you know, one of the main things that drives us to the teachings of the Buddha and to come to a place like this is starting to realize that the happiness that can be found in the world is ultimately not good enough. And that if we want to find some kind of real happiness, we have to look somewhere else. So this is the first category, that which is pleasant now but ripens in the future as pain. And the second category, that which is painful now and ripens in the future as pain, the Buddha gave the example of ascetics in his time who would intentionally take on very difficult austerities and difficult practices, torturing their bodies and inflicting incredible pain to themselves, with the thought that since suffering comes from bad karma, then they would just try to burn off all of their bad karma as fast as they could by just really inflicting massive amounts of suffering, lying on beds of nails and starving themselves and things like this. And in many times in the suttas, the Buddha points out that they're mistaken in their understanding of karma and of suffering and of happiness. And the Buddha points out that these people actually, you know, they're going the opposite the opposite direction. Experiencing great physical pain, physical suffering, then they'll be overwhelmed by that suffering, and being overwhelmed by it, then their suffering increases not only in that moment, but also in the future, because they are reinforcing, strengthening the habits of aversion, anger, this kind of craving, wanting to get away from the pain. So people who take on these practices, instead of burning up their negative karma, they're actually creating more negative karma. And although we probably don't really practice these kinds of austerities, the reality is that this kind of self-torture is something that everyone in the world does, maybe not physically, but mentally. And our habits of desire, anger, and fear, and all of our other unwholesome emotions, they attack us and they torture us, and we become overwhelmed by them. And becoming overwhelmed by them, we suffer not only in that moment, but also in the future, because in the same way as the ascetics who are torturing themselves, we're cultivating aversion, or cultivating the negative state of mind that we're lost in. And the Buddha gave the simile of the man who likes pleasure and not pain, who wants to live and not to die. And then they would bring him a drink that was made with very repulsive ingredients, very unpleasant to taste. And they would say, "Good man, here's a very repulsive drink. Drink it if you'd like, but we have to warn you that there's also poison in it, and it will kill you." And then the man, for some reason, would just drink it. And not only would he suffer as he's drinking it, but then he would also suffer in the future because of the poison. So this is this is the way that we usually deal with our negative habits, negative emotional tendencies. And we can say that these first two categories are the way of the world, the worldly path, the pleasure that leads to suffering, and the suffering that leads to suffering. Basically, for people who live in the world, who don't practice meditation, then whether they experience pleasure or they experience pain, then it's basically all leading to pain in the future because of the way that they hold it, or that they respond to it, responding to it with craving, with desire or aversion, experiencing things that we like, delighting in them, and then suffering when we don't have them anymore, trying to cling to them, things that we don't like, trying to get away from them, being overwhelmed by the negative emotions. And this is the reason why, although everybody desires happiness, then as they live their lives, they tend to just experience more and more unhappiness. So then the Buddha points to the last two categories, that which is painful now but ripens in the future as pleasure, and that which is pleasant now and ripens in the future as pleasure. And we can say that these two are the path of the practitioner, the path of the meditator. And this category of that which is painful now but ripens in the future as pleasure. The Buddha said here, somebody has strong desire, strong anger, strong fear, strong emotional suffering. And because of having this strong emotional suffering, then these emotions attack them frequently and cause them great difficulty, great suffering. And although they're faced with this, with the suffering, they, although weeping with tearful face, they live the holy life, or they live the life of a practitioner. So that instead of turning to sensuality in order to distract themselves from their suffering, then the practitioner faces their suffering. And for most of us, I think for most practitioners, we find ourselves in this category, which is coming to the practice of wanting to use meditation to overcome our suffering, but especially in the beginning, maybe there's not really much happiness to be found, and all we're faced with is just an incredible amount of suffering. And for those of us who come to live here in the monastery and really take on this practice, sometimes we have years of suffering that seems like we can't go beyond it. You know, it seems like we won't ever be able to break through it. And I think that this is the place that most practitioners find themselves in. But there's always this emphasis by the Buddha and the other great disciples of the Buddha and the modern day meditation masters that whether we experience happiness or not in the practice, especially in the beginning, is not really so much the point. You know, it's just more learning how to bear with difficulties and learning how to go against our habits, learning how to be present with suffering. This weeping with tearful face and continuing to live the holy life is something which is, you know, it's definitely a reality actually for quite a lot of us. You know, even Lumpur Cha said something like, if you haven't cried three times in the practice, then, you know, you haven't even started practicing, which is quite wonderful. You know, is saying like, it's not that if you cry, you've broken down into tears three times, then you're ready for enlightenment. It's like, that's kind of the beginning, you know, like breaking down into tears three times is kind of the beginning of the practice. So this is the reality that most of us find ourselves in. And Lumpur Cha said that the practice is like pulling a knife out of your heart. And I imagine pulling a knife out of one's heart is extremely painful, but of course leaving it in one's heart is more painful. And that's like our practice, if we really take it on, is something that's extremely painful, at least in the beginning. But if we don't do the practice, then we're bound to experience far more pain in the future. And on this topic of pain and enduring pain, then the Buddha gave this quite extreme simile that many people are familiar with, saying that if somebody came to you and said, "I have a proposition for you. I'll come in the morning and I'll stab you with 100 spears, and then I'll come in the afternoon and I'll stab you with 100 spears, and then I'll come in the evening and I'll stab you with 100 spears for a total of 300 spears. And then tomorrow I'll come and I'll do the same thing, and I'll come every day and I'll stab you 300 times with 300 spears. But I guarantee at the end of 100 years, you'll realize enlightenment." And the Buddha said that we should take the deal because it's a very good deal for us. So this is a quite extreme an extreme simile to point out this fact that, you know, in the end, we might have to endure great suffering to really become skilled in meditation. But no matter how much suffering we have to experience, it will definitely be worth it in the end. And the simile in this particular sutta that the Buddha gives for this category is, suppose that there was a person who was very sick, and then a doctor would come and would bring him medicine, and the medicine would be made with bitter herbs and very very bad tasting ingredients. And the doctor would give this medicine to the sick person, and taking that medicine, they would suffer as they drank it. But then in the future, they would completely recover from their illness. So this is like meditation, especially in the beginning, when we're still very much struggling with our defilements and our problems. And this practice can be very, very bitter medicine for most of us. So the last category then, that which is pleasant now but ripens in the future as pleasure as well. And the Buddha says here, someone doesn't have strong desire, and they don't have strong anger, and they don't have strong fear. They have worn these emotions away and gained some kind of power over them through the practice of meditation. And not having these strong emotions, then they wouldn't be overcome by these emotions frequently. And these emotions not being present, then they would, whenever they wanted, they would experience the bliss of meditation, of samadhi. And this is opposite to the person who tortures themselves. The person who tortures themselves increases in suffering, you know, suffering then and suffering in the future, whereas this person experiences happiness then because of their peaceful state, their peaceful mind state. They experience great happiness then, and delighting in that happiness is leading to the experience of that same state in the future, or the increase of that state to higher states. So in this way, it is something which is pleasant now, and it ripens in the future as pleasure. And this is, you know, maybe we can say kind of the following stage, or the second stage of our practice. For most all of us, then we spend maybe many years, or maybe most of our life, in the stage where we experience mostly suffering, very little happiness in our practice. But if we really put forth consistent effort, then there can come a time when we do cross over into that stage where our mind is basically happy all of the time. And not only is it happy then, but it's increasing in happiness all of the time. And the great meditation masters have described that kind of experience as like, you know, that happiness not only being something that one experiences when one is sitting in meditation, but it's something that one experiences all of the time. And they describe just going through one's day as if they were like a feather, and they feel like they're just kind of floating along through the world. There's no conflicts or tension. There's no imbalance. There's no stress at all. You know, just kind of completely flowing like water, or like a feather, just lightly blowing through the world. and the simile that the Buddha gives for this category is the person who's very sick, and then a doctor would come and give him medicine, and this medicine would be made with very delicious ingredients like honey and ghee, so that the sick person taking the medicine, they would enjoy it as they took it, and then it would also cure them of their illness. So in the beginning, and perhaps for a very long time, then we find ourselves in the reality of having to really struggle with our emotions and try to learn how to overcome them. And although we desire the happiness, it's as if that happiness is out of reach. And one of the classic similes that the meditation masters always use is like digging for water. And, you know, we can say if you go far enough underground, then eventually at some point you'll find water. But the water is not just 1 foot or 2 feet underground. You know, it's many, many feet, sometimes very far underground. So that although one is desiring water, one has to go through a lot of non-water in order to get there. So all of this dirt that's in our way, you know, is something that has to be removed before we can really find the water that we're looking for. And this is just like our practice, you know, seeking the happiness of meditation. Then it's somehow still quite far out of reach. It's being blocked by something, and that which is blocking it from us is our defilements, desire, anger, fear, all of the other forms of delusion are like the dirt that stands in our way. So the practice of the Buddha is teaching us how to slowly dig away that earth, so that one day we can come to a place where we start to find maybe small amounts of water, and eventually large amounts of water. So these two sets, these four categories, we can say the first two are the way of the world, and the second two are the way of a practitioner. And we people in the world, you know, they have a decision to make. They have to decide whether they'll walk the way of the world or whether they'll walk the way of a practitioner. And I feel like our decision is very much like this well-known psychology experiment where they have a child sitting at a table, and they put a cookie in front of the child, and they tell the child, here's a cookie, you can have it if you'd like. Or if you wait for 5 or 10 minutes and you don't take the cookie, then we'll give you 2 cookies. So the child is faced with this dilemma, and some of the children will just take the cookie right away and eat it. And some of the children will just choose to wait for the second cookie. And the researchers have followed these children through their lives, and they find that not surprisingly, the children who are willing to wait for the second cookie are far more happy and far more successful in their lives. So this ability to delay gratification, or to choose something which is in the short term is maybe not as pleasant as something else. but we know that in the long term, actually, it will become much more pleasant. This is a sign of great spiritual maturity and wisdom, and this is I feel very much like the decision that we have to make. You know, will we take the one cookie that the world offers us? You know, the cookie, it doesn't last very long, and then we're just hungry again. Or will we take having waited for quite a long time and maybe endured lots of suffering, we won't just receive two cookies, we'll receive as many cookies as we could ever want. And I've always found it very, very inspiring that on New Year's Eve every year, while the vast majority of people in the world will go and enjoy themselves in the world doing worldly things, there's always a group of people who will come here to practice meditation, chanting, listen to a Dhamma talk in order to bring in the new year with this kind of cultivation, cultivating our skill in meditation, cultivating our skill in wearing away our defilements. And the fact that there is a group of people who are willing to go against the stream of the world and who have realized that they're willing to put forth the effort and to delay that immediate result and delay that immediate gratification in order to seek out some kind of real happiness that maybe they will be able to find in the future through this practice. I've always found that to be incredibly, incredibly inspiring. So in closing, I just want to say Anumodana to everyone who's here and who listens to this. I delight in your goodness, in your decision to follow this path and to train the mind to seek happiness that we all, I think, intuitively know does exist, even if it is still quite out of reach for many of us. And I very much hope and wish that everyone here will be able to follow this practice through the course of this life and to find the real peace, the real bliss, real long-lasting happiness that we all are seeking. So thank you all for that, for reflection.